Hey guys, thanks for tuning in to Crime, Lime, and Vodka. We're a newly established podcast, which is made up of a bartender and a hairdresser who likes to unwind with a cocktail and a crime case. We'll contain violent descriptions and streams of details following the murder cases. Here's to make a difference in the only way that we know how. Thanks for tuning in to Crime, Lime, and Vodka. Hey guys, welcome back to Crime, Lime, and Vodka. It's Tracy.
And I'm Amber.
And we're here to tell you about a crazy fucking story that I've been into since I was 13 years old. I remember watching the 2020 with my sister that passed away. Mm-hmm. And this started my obsession with true crime, so I'm just so fucking excited. Okay, so first off, we're going to talk about the sources, because I feel like this was like the best thing that I've ever gotten into. So I feel like it'd be a good idea for like our viewers, if they're interested in, they can go ahead and do it. So we've watched Paradise Lost 1, 2, and 3. There's a three-parter. It's the entire course. It's like 6 hours worth of information. Then I've read The Devil's Knot and watched the movie. The movie was really shitty. It has Reese Witherspoon in it and not worth it. Book is really good though. Life After Death by Damien Eccles, who is one of the guys that was convicted for the murders, and then West of Memphis, which I watched this morning. Let me tell you, honey, amazing. It has so much more that I learned into it, and it was more detailed than anything else. So okay, so obviously we're going to be talking about West Memphis, the case of the West Memphis 3. So there's some celebrity supporters who helped get them out of jail, so I'm going to go ahead and like name off the people that were supported, because you're going to be hearing me talk a lot about them. So it was Johnny Depp. Him and Damien actually became best friends and got a matching tattoo. Well, a few. And he's played with his band, the Black Keys. Metallica. They have written, and there's a song at the end of Lost Paradise 3 that they wrote for them. The Dixie Chicks. Natalie Maine, the lead singer, plays a big part at the end of it, because there's a lawsuit involved with her, but she's on the good side of it. Then we have Burke Sahls, Grove Pashley, and Kathy Bakken. They were the co-founders of the West Memphis 3 that actually ended up helping them get out. Lori Davis, who became Damien's wife in 1999. I love her. She's fucking awesome. Brent Turvey, he's a forensic criminal profiler who later helped kind of get the evidence straight that they never had. And then there's the lead singer of Pearl Jam. I can't remember his name off the top of my head, but it's about to get intense, sis. You ready?
For this shit? I didn't know celebrities was... And
there's way, way more. There's this guy that I can't remember. He was in one of the documentaries, but he became best friends with Damien too. Like, they all became so close. It's ridiculous.
So cool.
Okay, so we're going to talk a little bit about the case first, and I'm going to give you a background on all the characters in the case, and then we're going to jump into the crime. So there was this murder of these three young 8-year-old boys who were all best friends, and they were Boy Scouts. So they kind of thought... It was very weird that all of a sudden they came up missing. So, I'm gonna run through them. So, it was called the Robin Hood Hills murder, which is a little wooded area in the back of their town. And it's really crazy that it was so ducked off, and it was really dangerous for all these kids to be back there to begin with. Mm-hmm. But that's where their bodies were found. They were reported missing at 7 p.m. by John Mark Byers, who is one of the victim's father. So we have Michael Moore, who was 4'2", 55 pounds. He had brown hair, and he was the son of Todd and Dana Moore. He was, his actual death was caused by drowning. Christopher Byers, he died from loss of blood. He was the most mutilated child in the case, and his stepdad is a nutcase. He is so fucking off the rocker. Like, bro, he is crazy. So you're gonna hear about him he was the child of Melissa Defer and Ricky Murray, but John Mark Myers had actually adopted him. He was 4 foot tall, even 52 pounds, with light brown hair. He was so cute. This is Christopher, this is Michael, and that's Steve Branch. They call him Stevie. Stevie died of a drowning. He was the son of Stephen and Pamela Branch, but his dad left when he was a baby, so Terry Hobbs adopted him and took over the part. He was 4 foot two, 65 pounds, and he had the cutest little white blonde hair. Like, it breaks my heart because they were the most precious little boys, and they had one of the most violent deaths. So these are the guys that were actually convicted of the first degree capital murders of all three boys. Jesse was actually convicted of second degree murder of Stevie and Michael because he said that he grabbed Christopher. We're gonna get into that. So Charles Jason Baldwin, he goes by Jason. He was 16 years old whenever he got arrested. He was born on April 11th, 1977. He was really poor. His mom suffered from schizophrenia. So, like, when she would go to work, he kind of played the father role. He would take care of his siblings. He was a super good kid, good grades, but his favorite band was Metallica, and he had this crazy blonde mullet. Like, this kid was... he was, like, literally me as a kid, besides Damien. This is Jason. So, he... poor thing, like, he was kind of guilty by association because he didn't play a big role in this. We're gonna get into that as well. Damien Echols, I have been obsessed with Damien Echols since I was probably 14 years old. He was like that boy that I was in love with. Like, everybody's like, oh, I'm in love with Johnny Depp. I'm in love with Damien Echols. Like, he was so cute to me. Long black hair, trench coat, gothic kid, bitch. So he was actually Wiccan at the time of his arrest when he was 18 years old, and he had been arrested a few times for shoplifting and vandalism with his girlfriend, Dominitri, that's how you say it. Took me a second. He dropped out of school, and he was a really, really poor kid. They were all really very, like, bottom line, poor white trash. And he had troubles with his family. Like, his dad was abusive, his stepdad was abusive, his mom really didn't give a shit about him. He ended up getting his girlfriend pregnant right before he went to jail. And he was just seen as, like, a rebel. But didn't we all like bad boys back in the day when we liked boys? So, I mean, him and Jason were best friends. They actually said that they were so close that they were like brothers. If one had something, the other one had it. And they were so dirt poor, it was like, if one of us couldn't eat that night, well, the other one was going to feed us. Jesse Miss Kelly Jr. is actually the reason they had got convicted. Because he was 17 years old and he had an IQ of 72, so he was known as mentally retarded, which I hate that word, so he was mentally handicapped. And he was seen around Jason because him and Jason grew up together down the road. And there's this guy named Jerry Driver. And Jerry Driver was actually Damien's PO officer when he was a juvenile, and he was 18, so the guy was supposed to leave him alone. And Damien ended up getting in trouble after his arrest with the vandalism, and he moved with his birth father to Oregon. The guy followed him over there, and he was like checking up on him, reading about what he was doing, stealing his books and reading his journals. Like, he really was so set on trying to make it look like he was in a cult because he was Wiccan. And back in the day, it wasn't even a religion. It was just seen as, like, devil worshipping.
Yeah, because everybody associates Wiccans with...
and it's totally not devil. That. Yeah, it's literally
honestly, worship it's the complete opposite, but...
it's all white, and you... oh, my God. I hate that people think that about it because, like, Maggie was Wiccan, and... you're one of the best people out there when you're Wiccan because you think of the good morals and everything.
I'm sure in a small town, though, someone who had black hair, painted fingernails, tattoos, like...
oh, girl.
Oh, he must be worshiping the devil.
Oh, girl. Just...
just because he didn't fit in.
Oh, he was definitely me at 15. Yeah. 17. 18.
Goth kid.
Now. Like, if... people would go through my bookshelf and see the books that I have.
Oh my God. Or our Google search. Are you kidding me?
my Reddit. Honey, let's not even get into that because I would be in jail now. So, Jesse actually falsely confessed to the murders, which had indicted him for jail. And right after his confessions, they had arrested Damien and Jason. So before I get ahead of myself, we're going to talk a little bit about Jesse. So, I don't even know where to start with Jesse because there's so much information that needs to be said about him. Okay, so Jesse was actually implicated as a bargain. So he went there to be interviewed and they didn't let his dad in there. He was 17. They didn't let his father in there. In the state of Arkansas, you're still a minor. They didn't let him have a lawyer. They didn't even give him the option of a lawyer. All they did was read him his Miranda rights, but he didn't understand them. They knew that he was special. They knew that he was underdeveloped mentally, and they really didn't care. They just wanted somebody dependent on.
Typical.
Because they wanted to hurry up and close the case. And I feel like the justice for the three little boys, they should have actually took their time, researched, did DNA tests, and they did none of it. So Jesse, on the murders happened May 5th of 1993, and Jesse ended up getting interviewed May 7th, 2 days later. Where is my segment on the crime? Okay, so let's talk about the crimes first before I get too ahead of myself because I'm just so excited to talk about it. So the crimes happened on May 5th, 1993. The boys were reported missing at 6 o'clock, apparently, by Terry. But actually, they weren't reported missing until 8:30 and 9:15.
Terry's the stepdad.
Terry's the stepdad of Stevie Branch. Okay. And Mark Byers had actually reported Christopher missing at 8:30. They didn't realize that all the boys were missing yet. But they're getting into it. They're starting to realize, oh, these boys were all together. So they get out of school at 3 o'clock and they race on their bikes to hang out with each other. So they all go to Stevie Branch's house. First, it was Michael Moore. He rides his little bike up there and he's like, hey, Miss Pamela, can Stevie come outside to play? And she was like, okay, but I have to be to work at 5. So you better get your butt back here by 4:30. So this is around 3:30. They leave and Christopher pulls up on his little bike. He's like, oh yeah, and hang out. And he gets up to the door and he's like, Miss Pamela, can Stevie come out to play? And she's like, you actually just missed Michael and Stevie. Like, you gotta go find him. So he takes off and he's like on his little bike. He's like, yeah, I'm gonna find my friends. So Terry gets off of work at 4:30. He gets off at 4:30 and he drops Pamela off at work at 5. So from the time of 6 o'clock until 9 o'clock when he picks up Pamela, nobody knows where Terry is, the stepdad.
That's a big gap.
But the boys, all three boys, had alibis of what was going on at that night. So Jesse was actually in a county 40 minutes away at a wrestling match. And he was there with all his friends. He had witnesses that he was there. So he had a solid alibi. Damien and Jason were together with one of the girlfriends, Dominitri. I'm just going to call her D. They were all hanging out together at the house watching horror movies. So they had a solid alibi as well. And these kids go missing. So they were last seen at 6:30 by Terry Hobbs, which he later recants and says that he didn't see them all day. So they take off and they're riding their bike and they never came home. So about 8:30, Mark Byers, the stepdad of Christopher, is like, where's Christopher? Like, we need to figure out where he is. So his older brother Ryan takes off running, looking for him, and he runs into Terry Hobbs's neighbor. And she's like, oh, I saw Stevie, Christopher, and Michael all playing around 6:30 when I was leaving for church. And Terry had saw them and actually told them, come on, boys, come over here. Well, police statement says Terry never did that. Harry said that he hasn't seen them all day.
Okay, so Terry is already sounding real sketch, and we're in the beginning. Okay.
Girl. So, they thought and assumed that Terry had already told the police that he was talking to the boys at 6:30. It's good, huh? At 6:30. Well, he never did. He told them that he wasn't there. So, the police are doing a little search, but it's very limited and minimal because it was so dark, which I think is bullshit. If you're looking for three young boys, the next 24 hours are most critical.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you don't find them within the next 48 hours, 9 out of 10, they're dead. So, they visit the site where the bodies were found the night prior to finding them, but they didn't find any bodies. But it was dark, mosquitoes were out, it was murky water, like, it was disgusting out there. So at 8 a.m. May 6, 1993, the search was led by the Crittenden County Search, and they didn't really do a whole lot up until about noon. They searched all morning, and it was inconclusive that they could find anything at the Robin Hood Hills, the last place the boys were even seen at. Then, they eventually found the bodies at 1:45 p.m. The juvenile parole officer, Steve Jones, saw a black sneaker of a child floating in the creek. So he jumped in the creek, and he starts moving around, and instantly he feels something bumping him. And then next thing you know, he pulls out the body of Michael Moore. He was hogtied, and his right wrist and right leg was tied behind him, and his left wrist and left leg was tied behind him. So he was literally hogtied in the water. And they keep looking around, and they find their clothes. The little boy, Michael, Christopher, and Stevie were all naked in the water. So they find their clothes pinned into the dirt in the water of the creek. Now, the creek was very dangerous. It was very deep. It was like a ditch almost.
Mm-hmm.
And they had these, like, trunnels. I don't know what you would call it. Like, pipes mm-hmm. of that ran across. Let me see if I can get this to show you the picture. Nope, that's not it. Whatever. It doesn't matter. I'll show you in a minute. Actually have it in the book right here. So, they're looking everywhere for the other two boys, and this is it right here with the two bikes. They've only found two bikes. They didn't find three. So, they think that one of the boys was riding on the back of the bike because they couldn't find the third bike. So, after they have found the clothing, they kept looking, and they could not find two of the boys' underwear. Next thing you know, they pull out Christopher. And Christopher's genitals were mutilated. They never found his head of his penis or his scrotum.
Oh my god, what the fuck?
Like, this poor baby's body looks so horrible. This is Stevie's body when they found him. His right side of his cheek is completely mutilated. Well, that looks like, yeah, that's his right. And they couldn't figure out where the markings came from. They were like, okay, so one boy, Michael, was pulled out and he got beaten in the head, but like he didn't have the crazy extensive injuries that Stevie and Christopher had. Christopher was mutilated on the bottom and Stevie was mutilated on the top. Like, it didn't make any sense. So when they had pulled out Stevie, they noticed that his face was mutilated and he had, like, these weird bite marks on his head and on his side. So,
on his head?
Yeah, on his head, right here by his eyes.
Oh, my God.
But they never used that in the trial. They used the mutilation, but they never used the bite marks.
What you mean? Like, they didn't get, like, a...
They didn't get an impression of the teeth until later. So, they pulled all the boys out, and I think this is something that's very critical because whenever you find a body, you automatically call the coroner. They waited 2 hours to call the coroner, and it's May 6th, beginning of summer, super hot in Arkansas, and you're going to have these boys who were already decomposing in the water faster because water speeds everything up. You put them out in the heat, it's going to speed up the process even more, so you're not going to get an accurate time of death. You're not going to get an aggregate, like, type of death. Like, it kind of screwed up the whole investigation. And they tampered and contaminated the entire crime scene. So, it kind of fucked with the whole thing. So, immediately, after they pulled out the boys, they had a crowd outside that was right by the hills. And the mothers were there. both the stepdads and the actual dad, Michael Moore's dad, Todd, were all there. And the first thing that I saw when I was watching Paradise Lost 1 was Pamela's reaction, and I feel like it's the same reaction any mother would have. She falls on the ground in Terry's arms and is, like, screaming, wailing, freaking the fuck out.
Yeah.
Which any mom would do. So, like, automatically I was like, okay, she has no idea what happened to her kid.
Mm-hmm.
And then John Byers and Melissa are just pissed instantly. Like, they show their anger, but after the funeral, it was like, y'all crazy. Like, the shit that they say, I don't think normal people would have been like, I'm gonna say this stuff. Oh, yeah. I'm gonna say this shit. So, after the coroner had picked up the bodies, to get the bodies to the coroner, they had to wrap them up in sheets and put them in a body bag and carry them out of Robin Hood Hills because the van couldn't get into the woods.
Oh, shit.
So, they're even more messing with the bodies by rubbing sheets on it. So, you're not gonna be able to get the right evidence off of them.
This sounds terrible.
Girl, the autopsies were performed by the forensic pathologist Frank J. Peretti. He said Byers died of blood loss, Michael and Stevie died of drowning, so he was the one that determined their death, even though I feel like they all would have died at the same time. So this is what I kind of feel like happened. The persons that murdered the boys killed Christopher first, and the other boys had seen, so they had to get rid of them. Mm-hmm. So they threw them all in the water, and the other two boys just drowned.
Yeah.
That's what I'm thinking right now, reading into this. They thought that there was sexual assault into it, but the DNA test and the autopsy revealed they weren't. A pair of the pants were found at the scene with traces of sperm, but it was never linked to anyone.
Of course not.
Right. Prosecution claimed Christopher was mutilated, but was also murdered. And it was a stabbing attack. So they found these markings on the boys that were like these scratches across their body, and they swore to God that it was done by a serrated knife. We're gonna get more into that after too.
But no proof.
So that was the crime, and immediately after everything was done, they started talking to Jesse. So,
which is the slower one.
Yeah. Right. So, whenever they had realized the boys were murdered, automatically they thought, oh my god, it's the devil's work. I guess somebody was, like, just making a comment, and they were like, you know what, that's a good fucking idea. Let's say this was a cult. Even though none of the injuries or anything had to do with any cult rituals.
No, they just symbols.
And it was also in a Bible Belt, kind of like Loosedale. Like,
yeah.
Everybody just automatically thinks, oh my god, everybody hates God here.
Yeah.
We're gonna die by a Saint cult. So, a Satan cult. A Saint cult. Mm-hmm. Girl. So, Terry Driver was the person who brought Damien's name to the attention of the police of West Memphis. So, he was the PO, and they asked him to pull up all the boys that were on probation that seemed like they would be into black and cults and this and that, that run coherent with it. And the first person he thought of was Damien. So he pulls Damien's name out, and they're like, you know what? Let's look into his friends. Let's see if they have some information. So they go on to Jesse. And like I said, Jesse is special. So he didn't really know how to go about this. They actually had interrogated him for 12 solid hours.
Wow.
And only 46 minutes of it was recorded, and it was his confession.
He didn't, what the fuck is going on with these cops already?
He didn't have a lawyer present or a parent. So first off, that's illegal.
Okay. Can you tell me at the end of this if these cops go to jail or something for, like, not doing their fucking job?
Oh, this is the beginning of it. You're gonna get really pissed. You're gonna get so pissed. So, in the beginning of it, I feel like it was already written, like, they were doing this shit on purpose, because the case number was supposed to be 93050555.
Mm-hmm.
They had changed it to 93050666.
Oh my god.
And they actually talked to Gary Gitchell, who is the police that's interrogating Jason with Brian Ridge, And they were like, don't you think it's a crazy coincidence that it had 666 in it? And he was like, oh my God, you're right. That's insane.
Wow.
But you changed it. Don't talk to me. So Ridge and Gitchell were actually the interrogators that were doing his confession. And I think it's so insane that he didn't have any sympathy towards it. So it kind of went a little long with this. They asked while he was interrogated, how did he know about the little boys? And he was like, I don't know anything. Like, I don't know anything that happened. So it goes on and on and on. So eventually they start interrogating him and he's like, okay, I'm going to confess. Well, moral of everything was he was supposed to get $3,500 as a reward. And he thought, that's some good money to give my father to get a new truck. Mm-hmm. They were dirt poor. He loved his dad. He just wanted to go home to his dad. He was tired of being there.
Yeah, and I'm sure after how many hours?
He started at 9 a.m.
I would be fucking tired too.
They started at 9 a.m. and they didn't finish until after dark.
So, and I feel like the cops kind of like coached him.
They coerced it completely, yeah, 100%. Like, 100%. And the most fucked up part of it was the kid had the mind of like an 11-year-old, even younger than that. And he didn't understand half the stuff they were doing. So it started off with them being like, so Jesse, you said the murders took place at what time? He said, okay, so this is what happened. The boys called me at 9 and we met at the woods. And he said, 9? Well, the little boys actually went to school. So you think it was after that? And he's like, well, you know, I think it was more around noon.
So he was trying to like sneakily.
He was giving him the answers that he wanted. And Damien didn't go to school.
Such trash.
Damien didn't go to school. He dropped out. Jesse dropped out. He was actually at work that day. And Jason was in school that day, and his mom had actual papers proving that he was in school that day. And all three boys were in school. So there's no way it would have happened during the day because they were all in school. So he was like, I think it happened around noon. And he's like, did you have a watch on you? And he's like, no, it was at my house, but I do know how to read time. Like, they were starting to piss him off at this point. He was just aggravated because they just kept going over and over and over trying to get him to say something. So they stopped the tape and they're like, Jesse, you got to tell us the right time. I think you're confusing this. I think you're kind of confusing the times that are going on. So he's like, again, Jesse, what time did y'all get the boys? And he's like, I think around like 5 or 6. Okay,
and
perfect
time.
That's
all they needed.
That's all they needed. They needed to place him there. So they go on and ask, what were the little boys tied up with? Were they tied up? They already told you that they were tied up. So he says, a brown rope. I don't know, Jesse. Are you sure? I think they were tied up with shoelaces. They were trying to give it to him. The little boys were tied up with white and black shoelaces. But he could not get it right. He kept saying that they were tied up with brown rope.
Bro, I'm really gonna look up this cop after this. Like,
oh,
I'm so
I hate
pissed.
Him. He's actually in the book, right?
I am so
here.
Pissed. I know. I keep looking because when you say his name, I'm like, bro.
I
he
hate
looks
Gary
like
Gitchell.
A fucking skis ball.
Brian Ridge is just as evil, but I feel like Gitchell. Okay, so after. Oh, girl, I'm gonna tell you. I can't tell you yet, but I'm gonna tell you.
Okay.
So after all that had went down, they had picked up Jesse and threw him in jail. That night was a Wednesday night, and normally Jason was babysitting his little brothers that night because his mom would work all week long, but that particular night he had passed the 10th grade, so his mom said, you know what, I'm going to pay for a babysitter, go have fun with your friends tonight.
Mm-hmm.
So him, Dominique, D, because I can't fucking pronounce her name, D and Damien and another friend had all got together and they were going to watch horror movies. You know I love having horror movie marathons. Like, that's my favorite thing ever. And they were doing something that I feel like we do all the fucking time.
Yeah.
They were just chilling. Talking about really fucking gory, crazy shit. And around 10:30 that night, two cops pull up at Damien's house with guns pointed at Damien's face, trying to get into his house. And they took off running. And Damien's sister answered the door. Well, like, she let him in through the door. And Damien and Jason were hiding in their room. I think it was in Damien's room. And the cops arrest them immediately.
How are they hiding?
because the cops had been following them, interrogating them the whole time. Days leading up to their arrest, the cops were interrogating the shit out of them, trying to get something out of them. Well, they couldn't get anything out of them because they didn't know anything.
Yeah.
And it was just, they had got arrested that night and they got let go the next morning. They were held for 8 hours because they had no information or evidence to hold the boys. Mm-hmm. They had nothing to link them there. Damien's grandmother had actually sold her wedding ring to get Damien a lawyer. Mm. But when he was in interrogation, the police would not let him have a lawyer, which is illegal. They're so fucking crooked. So they held him for 8 hours and they finally let him go because they had nothing against him. But after a month had passed, and Damien was the most interrogated person out of all three of them. They said he was a source of information, but he denied knowing anything and had any knowledge about it. But before that, Jason and Damien, they were like getting followed by people, mm-hmm. and like people were trying to get them to come. Like, for instance, there was this witness named Vicky Hutchinson, and she was actually at the police station the same day that Damien and them were there, and she knew Jesse because Jesse would babysit her little boy. Mm-hmm. Her little boy was friends with the three victims, mm-hmm. and he was their age. He was 8 years old, and while she was there, she was trying to deny theft from her employer. So they were trying to stop her from getting away with it. They were there, they were interrogating her, and she noticed that all the boys were there. And Aaron had mentioned something, the little boy Aaron, her son, had mentioned something about, oh yeah, the boys that had done it. What do you mean the boys that had done it? So they actually conned her to get out of her charges to plead against or testify against Damien and Jason. So she set up this thing with Jesse to get Damien to meet her. Mm-hmm. So she goes to the bookstore. She gets all these octocult books, these Satanist books and stuff, puts them out on her table, and Jesse brings over Damien and Jason. And they're like, all right, we ain't doing nothing else this night. Like, let's do something. So the cops had actually bugged her entire trailer, mm-hmm. and they were trying to get information out of them, but they did not say anything intimidating at all, like nothing that would have been held against them. So they threw it out of court. They were like, it was inaudible. No, you just didn't have any information, so you couldn't use it against them.
Right.
They were just being fucking dickheads. The police officers that were at the crime scene were trying to withhold a little bit of information that they had. Like, they had a hair that they had found on the ligament that was the ligature that was holding the little boys together. Mm-hmm. But they never did a DNA test.
Oh my God.
There was this black man that was seen at Bojangles, which is a restaurant right by where the boys were murdered. And he was covered in blood. And he went into Bojangles and he went in the bathroom and he was dripping blood everywhere. And they called the police. The employees called the police. Police went through the drive-thru to get a statement from them. Never even went in there to see the man.
What the fuck?
So the next day, two police officers had went to Bojangles to get a statement from the employee. And they got samples of blood from it, but they never ran tests on it. So what if that man really did kill the boys? You're just going to let him free and hold these three innocent boys accountable? Yeah,
because they fit the crime. Because
it was a cult.
They're
that wasn't
weird.
Yeah, it wasn't even a cult murder. Like, come on, people. Get your life. This is 1993. Like, it just pisses me off so bad because shit like that still happens today.
Yeah, but like, absolutely.
Come on, man. So on May 7th, Damien was interviewed 2 days after the bodies were found. During a polygraph test, he denied any involvement, and the polygraph examiner indicated there was deception during the test, but couldn't prove it in the reports.
Okay, but polygraph tests, even now, they get thrown out of court most of the
time. Yeah, they can't be
held. They're not even reliable.
Yeah, because it's all about your heartbeat, and it doesn't mean anything. So on May 9th, during an interview, Detective Brian Ridge, he mentioned that one victim had wounds on his genital, and they viewed it as incriminating evidence because when they were interviewing one of the boys had mentioned that one of the kids was mutilated. But during this entire investigation, they were letting information out to the media immediately. So it's hard to find people in the state of Arkansas that didn't know anything. Because it was super hot right now. Three young 8-year-old boys got murdered and they can't figure out what happened. And now all of a sudden it's a cult murder. Like, dude, people in Louisiana knew about it. Maggie told me that she followed this entire thing. And she was like, bro, I listen to Marilyn Manson. Shut the fuck up. Like, they were seen as evil because he listened to Slayer and Metallica and they had black hair. They said they had black painted hair, but Damien's hair was naturally black. They painted their nails black and wore trench coats. That's just like they tried to say that the Columbine was because of Marilyn Manson.
Mm-hmm. Dumb.
Girl, grow up. Grow up.
Typical. Oh, I'm not gonna say that.
Grow the hell up. Girl. So, they all eventually ended up getting arrested. And, hold on, let me pause this real fast. So, during the investigation, the interrogation of the boys, after they had realized that the boy was handicapped, during it, they were like, Jesse, do you know what a penis is? Obviously, you knew the boy was special, like, wasn't completely developed. If you're gonna ask him, a male that's 17 years old, if he knows what a penis is.
Mm-hmm.
Stupid. Duh. So, I was just kind of pissed off because the way they're going about it, they're not even giving him a chance to speak. They're, like, speaking before he can even answer them.
Yeah,
giving him the answers.
Feeding him the answers.
And all he wants to do, poor thing, is go home and be with his dad. So, he's literally just telling them what they want to hear.
Mm-hmm.
You can tell. All of his confession is inaccurate, it's incorrect, and it doesn't even follow the timeline of the actual crime. And he had a solid alibi. So, he didn't understand. He thought that after he told him this, oh, tomorrow I can tell him it's all a lie. He didn't know that they were going to use it against him to hold him in court. So, he was pretty much completely terrified, and then they start showing him pictures of the boy. Like, look at this picture of Stevie. They showed him pictures like this. And being a kid like that, you're fucking terrified.
Mm-hmm.
So they upset him. He was exhausted. He was tired. He was scared. He didn't know what was going. He was probably crying his fucking eyes out because he was emotional. Like, I would have been fucking emotional and crying because I wanted to go home. He was probably hungry, wanted to take a shower. Like, he just was going through shit. And they just continued and continued, and then they tried to throw in, oh, you know Damien and Jason, right? So they pulled him into it. He tried to say that the boys had ran, and he had left Damien and Jason at the crime scene, and he left. But he had came back, because he talked him into saying that. He tried to say that Jason and Damien had beat the boys, and they screwed him. They raped him. But there was no sexual assault followed on any of the autopsy report. They were not abused like that. They were beaten. And they were mutilated. But he tried to say things that weren't even true. So it was just not making any sense at all. So he ended up getting arrested that day. Damien and Jason as well. And booked and charged with first degree murder of the three boys. So his trial began on February 17th, 1994. 8 months after his first confession, he had spoke with cops again against his counselor's advice to not speak with them, and he told them about the boys, the abuse, and the murder all over again. So this is his second time confessing. Stidham was Jesse's attorney, defense attorney, and he followed him through all 18 years of his time in jail. He was the only defense attorney that had stayed with the boys. And he did most of it pro bono. Because he really, at the beginning, he really thought that Jesse was guilty. He was like, oh, this is going to be easy. We're just doing a plea deal. We'll be in and out. And the more that he researched it and read over the confession, he was like, this is insane that they're using this against these boys.
Yeah, like he's lying.
He's lying. Since Jesse denied testifying against Jason and Damien, they couldn't use his confession on their trial. So they had separated it. Mm-hmm. Jesse by himself, and then Damien and Jason by them, like, together, but away from Jesse.
Maybe not.
So they're in trial, and they're starting off with his confession. And first off, how can you even use that confession? Like, the judge, David Burnett, would not allow any people that were known for false confessions that were experts on it to be allowed in the courtroom. They did not allow certain experts to be allowed in the courtroom at all. He didn't believe in psychologists or psychology being used in a prosecution. He didn't believe in any of that, but he believed that a cult specialist expert should be allowed.
Wow.
But no psychologist should. He completely botched the entire trial. Like, I think he was so full of shit. Jesse's lawyer wasn't allowed to say pretty much anything. He wasn't allowed to talk about the false confession. He wasn't allowed to talk about Jesse's mental handicap. He wasn't allowed to talk about how any of it didn't line up with what actually happened. So they pretty much had to go through Fogelman, who was the prosecutor, John Fogelman, before they could run any questions in the court.
Bro, this case is so frustrating.
They weren't allowed to ask pretty much any question. Like, Dan had asked a question in court, and automatically Fogelman was like, "Objection! You can't say that." He was like, "Dude, what the fuck can I say?" He couldn't say anything. It was so stressful. His trial lasted 8 days.
Jeez.
8 days on a capital murder trial. What? Like, what? I've never heard of that before in my entire life. So, Jesse's confession was played for all the juries, and they automatically assumed, yeah, he's guilty. They didn't even know anything about Damien or Jason yet. But automatically, just because of that confession that was used, they thought he was guilty. So, Jesse's sentence was life in prison plus 40 years. So he got a life sentence for Christopher Byers because he had said that he chased him down and held him down. Mm-hmm. So he got first degree murder for that one. He got second degree murder for Stevie Branch and Michael Moore because he said he didn't have anything to do with it. So he got 20 plus 20 years. So, like, we knew that Damien and Jason were going to be fucked. We knew that shit was going to be totally fucked. Since the Bruton's rule was involved, they weren't allowed to use his confession with the other two boys. Mm-hmm. So John said this thing after he had an interview after Jesse's sentence, and Melissa, let's just say, she looked super fucked up. She was a heroin addict. This is Christopher's mom. And crazy ass stepdad. I wish I could show you the documentary so we could just talk about it right now. But if you could see this wild man, 5 days after the murders, Mark goes back to the crime scene and he's saying how he would literally cut them up in pieces, shoot them. Him and Michael Moore's dad, Todd, are shooting guns and they laid out these different bottles and they're like, "Bow, the black one in the center, that one's Damien's head." Like, they're saying all this shit on a documentary about their kids being murdered. And I understand, like, you're an angry parent. I would totally probably be the same way, but I wouldn't be so out there about it on TV.
Oh, yeah.
Like, the mom, after one of the boys had gotten sentenced, she says that she would literally eat their skin off their face. And she would mail Jesse a skirt. She said after, she was like, "Jesse, I'm gonna mail you a sweetheart. I'm gonna mail you a skirt." Girl, y'all fucking crazy. Y'all are crazy.
With no proof anyways for these they kids just, to be locked up.
Because
the cops ain't doing their job.
Right, but you have to understand, like, they were feeding the media all this stuff about the cult. And all the parents only knew what the police were telling them.
Yeah.
So they were like, "We trust the police." And the whole time Jesse was getting interrogated, he was like, "I really thought that the police were going to be there to help me. Like, I thought that's the whole point of this." He didn't even know what a lawyer did. He thought a lawyer was a police officer. He didn't know who Satan was. He got this booklet while he was in jail, and he asked his lawyer, he was like, Dan, what is satin? And he was like, you mean the fabric? Like, what are you talking about? And he was like, no, satin. And he pulled out a pamphlet, and he got it from a priest, and it's about changing your life to God's side and leaving Satan's hold. And he thought that Satan was satin.
Wow.
So how can you be in a cult, but you don't even know who Satan is?
Mm-hmm.
How can you be a Satanist and don't know who he is? Like, it doesn't make any sense.
Or say it right.
And being a Satanist isn't even about Satan. They don't believe in either sides. Like, it's just so fucking warped for me. Oh my God, it's so warped. So John had said, one down, two to go. Hopefully there's a different outcome, but we're gonna see how it goes. Okay, honey, so we're done with Jesse. Now we're gonna jump into Damien and Jason's trial. So, Damien's attorney, Scott Davidson, was, I don't really think that he tried hard enough to get him off, because Jason's lawyer, Paul Ford, did not want him to go on the stand. He was like, this is not gonna look good for us. It's already bad because you're getting pushed into this trial with Damien. It's gonna look bad if Damien makes himself look bad. So they did not want him to talk on trial at all. Damien did. Damien really made himself look really bad on the side that they were already going against them for being on a cult. Like, he was cocky. He didn't really care. He said to himself, like, he really thought that if I'm not guilty of it, and all these people can tell that I'm not guilty of it, and I didn't do it, how can they prove that I did it?
Yeah.
They had no evidence against them. It was just because of who they were. So, John Mark tried to say they found Christopher's genitals in a jar under Damien's bed. The stepfather said this rumor that he had heard about his son's genitals being under Damien's bed and believed it. So that goes to show you, like, what all the bullshit they were believing. Like, I don't understand. How can you be so fucking gullible? Like, you're not even taking anything into reference that these people didn't even research this shit. They were just trying to have an open closed case. So the trial of Damien and Jason begins. The prosecutor said that they heard Damien say that he killed the three boys and that he was going to kill two more.
They heard him say that. That's all.
Well, there was a witness that had said that. So they were pulling them on trial. So there was this girl that was a witness. Her name was Christine Van Binkle. And she went on stand saying that her and this other girl and this other girl and this other girl all heard Damien talking at a baseball field and admitted that he killed the three boys. But then they also said that she heard from the other girl who asked him if he killed the three boys. Then they changed it around and said that, you know, she said that she heard him say this, but then she said that she heard her ask him. Like, it was all kinds of bullshit, and none of it made sense.
She said bullshit.
That's all this case was about. Like, literally, that's all this case was about. She couldn't remember what Damien had said before the comment, after the comment, or what she was talking about during the comment. She couldn't say anything about it. Obviously, it was made up.
Right.
Obviously, everybody was just trying to get the $3,500 reward out of it.
Mm-hmm.
So, now we're going to start talking about Vicky. Vicky takes the stand, and that's the same woman that had her son go on there and do the audio for the police about... Yeah. So, on May 6th, before the boys were found, Vicky had gone to the police about not stealing the money from her employers, which she did in fact do. Not saying that she did, but honey, you did. Honey, you did. Like, if they're saying that you did it, well, look at us doing this thing.
Yeah, they could be setting her up. Well,
yeah, they could be setting her up, but I don't know. She seemed kind of crooked. Like, I've seen an interview with her, and she just seemed a little off her wagon as well. The little boy, Aaron, had actually said that the three-year-old boys were murdered in their playhouse before the boys were found. So that's kind of what got their attention about Aaron, because he was also in there when she was getting interrogated.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that his friends were murdered in their playhouse. And they weren't even found yet, but Dee Bray wanted them to, like, further have details of Aaron But the little boy didn't know anything. Like, he, when you're 8, I feel like kids just come up with this bullshit. Mm-hmm. Like, they just come up with these fairy tales, which this might have been one of them, but his words were that he had saw a Satanist who spoke Spanish. So they used that in trial. They had Aaron do a little voice for Jesse during his confession. They had him say a little thing with his little bitty voice, like talk on there and spook the shit out of him. And he thought that it was the little boys that were murdered talking to him. Like, they fucked with these kids so hard. And the little boy could not identify the West Memphis Three. The police had already linked Aaron's statement before the trials even began. So people already had this idea of what they were going to see. And this was the first case where the cameras were allowed in to film the entire court case.
Oh, I'm sure. Huge deal.
It was a big ass fucking deal. Everybody was so set on this, and they were probably turning on their TV like we did with the O.J. Simpson trial. Mm-hmm. Like, just waiting to see what was going to happen. So, after her confession, she had went on the witness stand, and she had said that Damien had took her to this meeting for the Satanists, and they were all having orgies and having sex outside, and they killed a dog, and they killed these animals, and they were doing this satanic ritual sacrifice. And she said that she had went there with all of them.
Is that true, though?
Right? She was trying to pull the wools over their eyes, and they believed it. None of them could recall a Wiccan meeting, and she later on admitted that she had lied on the stand.
Oh, my God.
Years later. So, next up was Dale W. Griffiths. He was the cult specialist expert that was going to take the stand. And guess what they brought on the stand as proof that he was in a cult?
What?
His Book of Shadows.
Oh, my God.
Didn't we try and make one?
Oh, my God. It's a fucking joke.
They definitely used his Book of Shadows against him as evidence.
Wait. We did try to make one.
I still have mine. I use it as my journal.
I
had the little moon phases, all the different moon phases in it. I definitely did. And this is the symbol that was in the front of his journal.
Ooh, let's go.
It was a pentagram with upside down crosses. And they used that against him. So he took Damien's Book of Shadows and used it as evidence and said what is in front of him was black and white witchcraft. So, he was, like, belittling everybody's idea of what Wiccan was. And Wiccan is a big term of white magic. And they were trying to say that there was segments in his book and in his journal. Because he had books that he had checked out of the library. And a lot of them were highlighted. And Damien was like, oh yeah, this book was highlighted because I'm sure the girl was probably, or the guy, or whoever was doing it, was probably doing a book report on something. Like, he had this book that was in his possession, and it looked like a book about witchcraft. But actually, it was an anti-witchcraft book, and it showed and taught him, educated him, on the Salem witch trials in 1600s. And then they also had a book that was about a priest that was showing the history of Christianity. Mm-hmm. So it was all these things that he was trying to use against him, but it was literally not able to be used against him. But they did. Like, that's something that doesn't have anything to do with the murder trial. It doesn't matter what the guy has on his bookshelf or what he listens to or what he looks like. It all matters if he did it or not. Mm-hmm. So in the middle of the trial, Paul Ford, Jason's attorney, stands up and goes, well, Dale, didn't you get your master's degree in the occult studies mail order? And he was like, yeah, I did it online. Really? What classes did you take to get your PhD from a master's degree? And he didn't take any classes. He couldn't come with anything. He was like, well, and Paul's like, what classes did you take, Dale? What classes did you take to get your PhD? Hmm. And he's like, none. I took no classes. None.
Okay, so great. Did they throw that out of court as well?
No.
Of course they used it.
He said, okay, so how do you say this man is an expert on something when he doesn't even have an actual PhD? And the judge, Judge Burnett, actually says, well, you know, life experience makes you an expert.
Well, he sounds like an experienced dude.
But a psychologist is not an expert who actually has a PhD in psychology, but an occult specialist who got his master's and PhD in a mail order is an expert. Tell me more, Judge Burnett. I hate this man. He literally makes me want to, like, come out of my skin and just, like, yell at him.
I wonder what other cases he completely just fucked up because he wanted to.
He was the... Okay, so, like, in this case, he was the judge who did all the appeals and everything following over. So, whenever you have a capital murder or any case, for that matter, the same judge has to do everything that has to do with that case.
Mm-hmm.
So, he follows this case for 18 years.
Wow.
And he's a dick in every single one of them. Every single thing he had to do with it, he was a dick. Michelle actually said that Damien was studying to be a priest back in the day. Because he studied all religions. He wasn't just Wiccan. Like, he had books on Wiccan, Buddhist, Hindu, Christianity, Catholic. Like, he had all these different religions that he was looking into. And I feel like that's kind of like me. Like, I look into all these crazy religions and stuff all the time. And this kid was just furthering his education and making himself more educated in different realms, and they're making it look like he's literally killing these kids.
Yeah.
Because of it. It doesn't make any damn sense. He said, Damien said that people tried to make Wiccan look bad, but West Memphis is like a second Salem because they tried to make it look like a satanic cult. And Damien even changed his name. His first name was actually Michael Wayne. And he changed it to Damien Wayne because, like, he got adopted by his stepfather later on in life. So he was already changing his last name to Eccles. So he was like, why don't I just change my first name?
Mm-hmm.
He was a junior. He didn't want to be that name anymore. So he changed it. And he chose Damien. And they used it against him that he chose the name Damien from The Omen. The movie The Omen.
Oh my God.
When he really chose it after kind of like a saint. Because there was this guy that he looked up to, and he explains in the trial why he chose that name and who he chose it from. And he explains that Wiccan is a religion of goddesses and a closer adjoined life with nature. So it's not actually witchcraft at all, and Wiccanism was bastardized with mm-hmm. them. So he tries to explain to them, and he says it really, really smart and really... a way that's not going to look bad on him. But while he was up there, they asked him, you know, what makes you different from other people? And he's like, you know, I never liked sports. I wasn't really into school. It made him look weird, and I'm not going to go around him. So nobody really wanted to be around the really poor, weird kid.
Yeah.
We already know that. And they brought up that he had, in his notebook, he had a quote by William Shakespeare in the front. And they were like, oh, what's this about? And he's like, it's William Shakespeare. And they had another quote in the back. And they were like, oh, what's this quote? And he's like, it's literally a quote from a Metallica song. Like, they were trying to make it seem like he was talking about death and murder and all this shit. Mm-hmm. And he's literally just quoting William Shakespeare and Metallica. And then they had a quote on Aleister Crowley, who was... he was like an occult follower. Like, he had his own occult, and he was very controversy, and he's known as somebody who's really hateful, but not at the same time he was like a good person. It's all a really crazy story, but he never read an Aleister Crowley. He just knew who he was. And he had a book by Anton LaVey, who was the founder of Satanism, but he never was an evil person. Like, people always think that Anton LaVey was, like, this crazy, evil psychopath, but he wasn't. like, Satanism is all about you're worshiping yourself. If somebody hurts you, then you can hurt them, but until then, you can't lay hands on anybody. You treat others how you want to be treated, kind of like the Bible. And if you lie, you lie. It's for a good cause. You believe in yourself. And if somebody damages you or your home, then you can damage them. So it literally wasn't anything about Satan. And they used that against him in court, that he had a book by Anton LaVey, which was the Satanic Bible, which I had a copy. Not because I'm Satanist, but, you know, we like to read on that,
like,
shit.
Like a normal person.
Yeah, like
a normal person. Their education.
Yeah, like, I also have books on Wiccanism and white witchcraft and the Bible, you know. Got all that shit. So Jason's other attorney, Robin Wadley, was trying to make sure Jason did not go on trial. I mean, he did not go on the stand. And he really talked Jason down from going on the stand. And they're in the back waiting for their verdict on their conviction. And Paul Ford asks Jason, you know, what would you want to do after you get out? Let's say that they say you're not guilty. What do you want to do? And he says, I just want to go to Disneyland. He's just a kid. Like, he just wants to go to Disneyland. And he's like, I would love to take you. Yeah, I would love for you to take me too. Let's go to Disneyland. Let's peace out. Let's fuck out of this place. So he was so innocent. And I feel like if they would have put him on the stand, it wouldn't have hurt his chances. Like, it would have just made him seem like a normal kid. Mm-hmm. And they made Damien look like a monster. And it pisses me the hell off. So they had another witness, Michael Roy Carson. He was an inmate with Jason when they were in the juvenile facility before the trial. And he said that he was a witness to having Jason admit to killing the boys. So he goes on the trial, he goes on the stand, and he goes up there and he's like, so yeah, I only knew Jason for like a day, and we ran into each other, and he denied killing the boys. But then a day later, I ran into him and he told me exactly what he did, how he murdered the boys, how he cut off his penis and sucked the blood out of the head of his penis in his scrotum.
Oh. What?
Sorry, y'all. Didn't talk about the trigger warning. But yeah, he said that he did that to the boys. Well, to Christopher. And I don't understand where he would come out. Like, why would you wait until the trial 8 months later to talk about this instead of telling them at the beginning? But I'll tell you why. He said that he saw how the family looked on television with Jesse's trial, and he was heartbroken, and he's a soft-hearted person. Okay, bitch. That's why you did it. He wanted to get off for what he was going to jail for, which was robbery. So he was going to spend a long time in jail, and he thought, you know, if I give this to him, the cops will let me off. Well, he gets off the stand, and people believe what he had said, because it's all he said, she said shit. Everybody believes that kind of stuff. So the dude's a liar, and the prosecution can definitely tell his lies. But guess what? They have more on him. So, a year prior to the murders, Jason had this honey knife. It was like, I'm sure your dad or your brother or somebody has one. It's like serrated at the top, and it's got the tip, like what you skin deers with.
I have one in my car.
Deers.
For sad people. I do have one in my car. Actually, my dad just gave it to me when he came down. And I will use it for fish sometimes.
You're definitely from the country. But I also have a knife and I have mace. So we're ready to kill some bitches. We're not going to kill anybody, but like, don't tempt us. Don't try and take us for human trafficking, bitch. Mm-hmm. So they said that, so they tried to say that a year prior to the murder, Jason's mom, Gail, who I had said was schizophrenic, her and Jason had gotten a fight because Jason's a little an asshole sometimes. You know, kids are assholes. Mm-hmm. So she took his knife and threw it in the lake behind his house. Well, Gary Gitchell, being the smart man that he is, said he had a hunch that there was a knife that was the murder weapon that is in the lake. The only reason he knew about the knife being in the lake was because Gail had mentioned it when she was getting interviewed that Jason doesn't even have a knife. She threw it in the lake a year ago. But not everybody knew that she threw it a year ago. So Gary uses that little bitty hunch, takes some divers that they had paid for to go dive in the lake. And 30 minutes from the time they got there, they found that exact knife. And they tried to say the serrated tips on the knife were the murder weapon and what had caused the little scratches on the boys.
Wow.
You know, since he's so smart, he got that hunch of it. Instead of actually being honest, he lied about it all. And a knife that wasn't even used in the murder, it was impossible to be because it was gone a year before the murders, he used that against them. And he actually got away with it. How, I mean, being a lawyer, yes, you do lie. But, like, how do you live with yourself and sleep at night knowing that you put these three teenagers in jail?
One, I could not.
Like, I don't understand how he got away with it. So, the knife, they said, was used to mutilate Christopher and cut his little dingling off. I don't want to say penis anymore. It just creeps me out. So, on March 19th, 1994, the defense shows that there's no evidence against the West Memphis Three. Damien wrote a book, his journal, that's not relevant to the case. And they use the evidence that he was in a cult and he was the cult leader. It's irrelevant. It's not even a cult murder. Like, they tried to say that, but they just didn't listen to the defense. They tried to show that the crime scene doesn't even fit with a kid bleeding to death. There was no blood at all at the crime scene. Not a drop of blood at the crime scene. How do you do that? Mm-hmm. How do three teenagers that's never killed anyone before and have no... They're doing a cult ritual. Don't you think there's going to be blood there? Like, mm-hmm. It doesn't make any sense. The prosecution said that religion gives someone a motive. It's a reason. They're killing for the devil. That's their motive. The judge had a meeting with the prosecution and not the defense, which is actually illegal. You can't have a judge meet with one side of the court and not the other. You're not allowed to do that because that's making it a biased case.
Oh, but I guess it's okay for him.
So they were going to throw this case out and have it retrialed. But he was the judge that was saying if it was right or wrong for what he did. Like I said, for this trial, the one judge that's on the trial the whole time, he follows it.
Even if he's corrupt.
Yeah, so he said, there's nothing wrong with it. I did nothing wrong. Mm-hmm. So they allowed it. I think it was very biased and the man just wanted to see these kids rotten gym. Mm-hmm. That's all it was. So the defense said that they just find somebody weird who wears black to convict. No evidence to link to the murders. And Jason was guilty by association because he was friends with Damien. And Jesse was just thrown in the loop because he was dumb enough to confess. It's sick. Like, they think these kids are stupid and that they really did murder these children. And I really think that they knew they had nowhere to go and they come up with these bullshit facts mm-hmm. and evidence and it's not even relevant at all.
Just trying to bully somebody into something.
Exactly. They're just bullying these poor...
That's what it sounds like.
These poor white kids. White trash kids who were born in this small little Bible Belt county. And they can do whatever they want because nobody gives a shit about a poor kid who can't afford a good attorney. Mm-hmm. So, Damien, he is at this point... He finally gets to hold his son at the conviction. His girlfriend was pregnant. She had their little boy. And he finally gets to hold the baby. And in the documentary, Michael Moore's father, Todd, is sitting there and he's like pissed. He's like looking at him like, you get to hold your son, but my son's dead.
Yeah. Which I get, you know.
Like. I totally get it. But this kid is like, he doesn't understand what it looks like on the outside. He's an 18-year-old kid who doesn't understand what's going on. He doesn't believe mm-hmm. that this shit can even happen to him. And he's like, you know what? They're probably going to convict me. But you know what? Like, whenever he's in the room while they're doing the debate and the jury's talking, the deliberation, one of the lawyers asks him, hey, Damien, what's his first words going to be? Not guilty? And he's like, no, it's probably going to be capital murder. Like, he just makes these stupid little comments. And it's
because,
like,
he's just a smartass.
Yeah, that's all like he's doing. Smartass. He's like, there's no way they're going to convict me on something they have no evidence on. It's just, it's fucking crazy. And Jason could have went, I mean, Jesse could have went against them and testified against them, but he refused to. So I feel like they should have took that in consideration. Mm-hmm. Like, he didn't even want to throw them under the bus. He didn't want to have anything to do with it. When they're sitting in the room and the jury is deliberating, Damien says all he wants to do when he gets home is get him some whiskey, and then he wants to buy him a cigar, cut it open, dump all the tobacco out, fill it up with marijuana, and just smoke him a big old blunt.
Same,
sis. I was like, have you been in jail that whole time? You deserve that blunt, bro.
Yep.
And it's just, oh man, so it's coming down to the point. They get called back in. The jury had came up with a deliberation in 2 hours. It took a whole day for them to come to the verdict that Jesse was guilty. So 2 hours, they already had their mindset. So they're standing up there and they're getting ready to get told, and Damien is found guilty of capital murder in all three boys and is sentenced to death by lethal injection.
Literally, it blows my mind that they can do that with no evidence.
A fucking kid, because he was 18.
Like, they no evidence at all.
None.
Like, he has an alibi. His DNA wasn't over there because y'all were too lazy to even find the DNA to begin with. Fuck. Y'all moving shit around.
And they don't even... They're so dead set on getting these kids convicted and charged in to rot in jail. They don't even look at the other suspects that they had. They had two other suspects that they were looking at.
Yeah, what about the dripping bloody guy in the fucking restaurant?
Right. They didn't even go.
Why would you go the next day? Why would you go do the drive-thru?
And not saying anything. Okay, I'm gonna say it. You think in this white basis town that's worried about these kids that are wearing black, why are you not worried about this scary looking black man that's covered in blood? Like, if you're that vindictive on a kid wearing black, you've got to be racist. Hello, like, it's in your fucking analogy. Like, come on. I thought that they went against him, because you know they always want to convict those that are different than them. Mm-hmm. I just thought it would have happened. Jason's found guilty of capital murder of all three boys on February 17th, 1994. Same day as Damien. And Terry didn't even blink the entire time they're reading the verdict. I just thought that was so, like, it gave me goosebumps seeing that man just sit there and he didn't even blink. Like, if I was a parent, I would have been praising them for giving this kid the verdict that they did.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're gonna kill him like they killed my son. That's what I thought would have been happening. So after this case, Gary Gitchell decides to retire because this was the ultimate ending to his career.
I was so exhausted to be a shit fucking man, fucking asshole.
Oh, man. He still believes that all three boys are guilty. The judge said the evidence was completely efficient.
Yeah, it was. It sounded totally reasonable.
So after... Mm-hmm. After the sentencing, I had read this excerpt that I was on Reddit the other day, and I was reading before I go to sleep because that's what I do every single night, and I came across this one that Damien had wrote, and it's like, I am, and he starts saying like what he went through, and it's a question and answer, and somebody asked him, what was it like getting told that you're sentenced to death? And he said, you know, it's like getting punched in the head repetitively. Like, you can't even catch your breath, but you're also in so much shock you don't understand what's going on. Like, it's unbelievable. But there's so much pain going to you, like, your head's just spinning. Like, you don't even know what to do.
Yeah, I couldn't imagine.
And you're a kid, like, you're 18. Like, when I was 18, yeah. I couldn't imagine my life being over. Even at 25, I couldn't imagine my life being over. Like, his execution date...
For something
date,
he didn't do.
Exactly. His execution date was set for May 5th, 1994. So, 3 months after his sentence and conviction.
Wow. I feel like usually they're, like, way longer than that because there's death row inmates. You know, I watched that show on Netflix or... You know, you're the one who told me about it. But anyways, it was like, some guys has been waiting for like 30 plus years to die. How do you just sit there and wait to die,
like San
bro?
Quentin, Scott Peterson has been on death row since 20 years.
Like, what do you even do in that case? Like, why would you even be good at that point? You know what I'm saying? Like, why would you even be good in jail? Like, I don't know. That's just my thought process.
And the thing is, like, with execution, you can always put a stay on it. You can always file a stay. And he actually filed a stay, and he was not executed then. They had pushed it back to 1999. So, he actually got away from being murdered that next few months. And I just, oh, man, like, it really breaks my heart that these kids are being put through all this. So now we're going to start talking about the parents of the victims. Because I kind of feel like this is a very big part of the story.
I want to get to know more about Terry. I just feel like I just got like this weird.
You got this weird feeling about
him.
Yeah,
you just look skeevy.
Oh, I thought that about Mark Byers. Mm-hmm. Like, he just gave me this weird feeling. Like, what are you doing? Why are you being so extra? I don't know. So there was an interview with Pamela Hobbs at the beginning of Paradise Lost, and she's laughing and saying, oh my god, I'm on TV. Like, what? You're on TV? Yeah.
Because your son was
But
murdered.
I think she was, like, definitely on a lot of Xanax or something, because, like, she has this bandana that Stevie wore when he was in the Cub Scouts, and she said it still had his scent on it, and she picks it up, and she has her keychains on her in her hand, and she puts it on, and all you hear is her little cross hit, her picture of Stevie on her keychain, and she puts it on her head, and she, like, literally looks like a doofus with it on her head. She's like, I wear this all the time like this. Girl, shut up. Shut up, man. They're so weird, but I feel so bad for them because they really did go through some shit. So John Mark Byers rambles for hours. Like, they show in Paradise Lost 1, they show him at the crime scene, and he's taking these, I don't know what you would call it. It's like mulch, and he's lighting it on fire, and he's like, Damien, Jesse, and Jason, this is all for you. You killed my little boys, and I'm gonna murder you, and I'm gonna step on you. And... Oh, this is Paradise Lost 2. And he had his teeth removed. So, like, his dentures keep falling out while he's talking. So, he looks like an idiot. Because, like, he's talking and his top teeth just keep trying to get out his mouth. And I was like, dude, you need some denture cream.
I need to watch this.
We're watching it tonight. So, John Mark Byers just rambles and rambles. And he says, ye thou, I walk through the shadow of death. He said,
girl.
I hope you really believe in your master, the devil, Satan, because he's not gonna save you now. He's gonna laugh at you, mock you, help torture you. He didn't need you. The devil doesn't need anybody. He didn't need your help. The devil's got all he needs. The Lord said Lucifer and all the angels were cast from heaven. He didn't need them. He just took their mind. He manipulated them and prayed to Satan. They had their satanic rituals and sexual, homosexual orgies out there, out here. I've been told crazy.
I love your impression. I don't know what it sounds like, but I swear to God, I hope he sounds just like that when I watch this.
Oh, girl, you about to get a... Oh, and this man is so freaking ugly. I don't know what it is, if it was just like they were so poor. All their teeth.
Yeah, I think it was just back then, though. Because my mama and daddy teeth are low.
I mean, my teeth are not perfect. I do not look good to me. But poor Mark, man. Oh, his
Mark
teeth are...
Rough mouth.
He described the body's injuries, and he named the accused and says... The day they die, he's gonna thank God, jump on their graves, piss on their graves, spit on their graves. Whatever body fluids I have to come out.
Okay, Mark.
Mark.
With your no proof.
Oh, I found the paper I was looking for earlier. So, Mark Meyer gave makers of the film a honey knife as a Christmas present. This was during the trial. I keep skipping back and forth because I'm jumping ahead of myself. But he gave this honey knife to the makers of Paradise Lost for Christmas present, and they noticed there was blood on it. So they actually...
Wait.
Yeah. There was blood on it, and they noticed the blood, and they gave it to the police, and they tested the blood, and it came back as a connection with Mark Byers as well as Christopher Byers.
What?
But they couldn't prove that it was Christopher's because they had the same blood type.
Okay, so my hunch was right. This man was out there chip chopping.
This is Mark. This isn't Terry.
Oh.
This is the crazy guy with the teeth.
Oh my God, wait a minute. What's going on?
I know. It plays with your mind. You don't know where it's going.
What the hell?
So they turned it over to police. They tested it and it came back. And they have Mark on the stand. Okay, this is during Damien and Jason's trial. And they got the knife on January 8th, 1994. And Gitchell got showed it. And he sent the knife off to this place, Genetic Design, got the small amount of blood, tested it. And they found out that it was both of them. But they thought that the DNA test was inconclusive, so they didn't use it. So Dr. Frank Peretti was the forensic pathologist for the state crime lab. He takes the stand and he tells everybody that the knife was serrated, was consistent with all the wounds of Christopher, small serrated wounds. Well, when Mark takes the stand, the knife is kind of, it's being held and like swung around and shown to everybody. And they ask him, they're like, so I thought you said that you never used the knife before whenever you gave it to them. That's why you had gave it to them. Why did we find blood on it? He's like, you know, I used to trim my toenails with it, or like I cleaned some Venice with it. And they're like, you cleaned some Venice with it, but you told us that you never used it.
Mm-hmm.
Why was your blood on it? And he's like, I don't know. Well, could you have cut yourself? And he's like, I could have. They're like, well, why, when we asked you if you could have cut yourself with it, you didn't say that? And he's like, I don't know. Maybe I just didn't remember. Like, it didn't dawn on me that it could have been, you know, used. I didn't think about it. So they kind of make it look like, okay, well, he's kind of guilty. But yet again, they don't use that in trial before the boys were convicted. They just let it go. Like, you know, whatever.
We'll just let it slide this time.
Yeah, it's so much more believable that these kids did a cult ritual and killed these other kids. Excuse me. So he pretty much got away with it, and he didn't say a whole lot about it. And Damien is sitting there during the trial, whatever. They're all sitting in the same room during the break. It's like a lunch break. And Mark is getting interviewed by the Paradise Lost crew. And he's like just talking stupid. Like, he's talking about these boys and how they're going to be found guilty, and he can't wait for them to rot in hell and all this crazy shit. And Damien's like, you know, I'm hearing him, and I see him more as a person now than just this crazy hillbilly. Like, he's like, this guy is more of a human than I thought he was. It's so weird to me. And Mark finally admits that he had a brain tumor. He was just so weird, dude. Like, this man really threw me off majority of the time. It was so weird. So a little bit more about John was, when the end of the case came, he did not believe that they did it. Like, after years later, he didn't believe that they did it. He actually believed somebody else did it. Damien and Jesse and Jason were actually obvious choices because they stood out, and everybody was mad that the police had no leads, so they were easy targets, I feel like, you know, to use that they were, you know, guilty. So Mark Byers was the only family member of the victim in the second documentary. They didn't have any of Pam Hobbs or Terry Hobb or any of that family in the documentary. They didn't have any of Michael Moore's family in the documentary. It was just John Martin Byers. And his wife had passed away in 1996. And they didn't say that her death was either a homicide, a suicide, natural causes. It was undetermined. They didn't know how she died. But, you know, she just dies one day. And the family, the grandparents of Christopher, said that the day of the murder, Melissa had called and said, "Hey, can you stay home with Christopher until I get home?" And the dad gets there, her dad, Melissa's dad, and John's already there, already home. And he was like, "That's weird." He's like, "Maybe if I would have just stayed there, Christopher never would have died." Because they thought maybe Mark did it.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody was just so confused on who had committed this murder. But everybody who was dead set on the three boys killing him was still dead set on the three boys killing him. Didn't make any fucking sense.
To ruin three innocent lives just because they look different. Or just because it was easy to convince other people.
I feel like the more they got deep into the trial, the state that was prosecuting them, Arkansas, knew that they were wrong and they didn't want to admit it.
Yeah. Like, y'all look like fucking idiots. Like, really, I know we're not the only podcast that's talking about this case. Clearly, there's a lot of them. And I'm sure that we can all agree on the fact that the cops and the judge were fucking dipshits.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Nobody knew how to do their job. And that whole entire state is fucking wrong for that.
And they did multiple appeals. And every single time, the Arkansas Supreme Court denied them.
Yeah, that's trash.
Like, there was so many chances they had to let those boys go free.
I could see now just didn't want to admit celebrities got involved in this. I mean, shit, if I had a lot of money too, I would have been trying to do something.
Mm-hmm. Jason said Mark seemed like the one who did it with his actions. And the way he was talking about the West Memphis 3, like, it just seemed, he was like, maybe Mark did it. Even Damien said that. Later, they recanted that and they apologized. They were like, "We should have never accused him because that's the same thing that people had done to us."
Wow. Like, how they still come out, like, saying sorry? Bitch, fuck you and fuck your mama for putting me in jail. Like, I'm not sorry and I ain't taking it back is what I would have said.
That's what I would have said. All right, y'all. Well, we're going to go ahead and do a second part on this because this is already almost an hour and a half. So we're going to do a second part following up on after the trial and a little bit more about the family members later. Thank you for tuning in. And don't worry, we're going to be back with part two.
Bye.
Bye.